welcome to the Feverbee podcast. My name is Katie Kobe, and I'm head of training here at Feverbee Limited. I train community managers in the art of community building using proven social science techniques. In the Feverbee podcast, I'll share tools and techniques that you can use in your daily community management efforts. Listen weekly to get new tips, industry news, and hear stories from guest practitioners to help you become the best community manager in the business. Make sure you subscribe for free updates and review our show notes to get all of the resources mentioned in the podcast today. Show notes are published weekly at communitygeek.com/podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce you all to Kim England, Global Internal Community Director for Pearson. On a daily basis, Kim manages a combined community of 42,000 employees on the Jive platform and is responsible for the community's overall strategic direction. Additionally, Kim supports all of the internal collaboration training needs, moderation, and helps leaders and business units within Pearson develop their own business collaboration strategies. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Hello, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Of course. It's so great to have you here. You spoke at Feverbee Sprint Conference in February, and I had heard absolutely nothing but great things from the attendees about your talk and really wanted to make sure that we got you on the podcast to share some of your ideas with the rest of our community. But before we dive too deep into it, could you tell us a little bit more about the communities at Pearson and what your sort of day-to-day community landscape looks like?
Yeah, sure. So we've had our communities in Pearson now just coming up 4 years. We'll celebrate our fifth birthday later this year. And we have two communities. So we have a core internal community called NEO, which is made up of 38,000 employees. And we also have a NEO Connect community, which is basically a community that we use with vendors, partners, some customers, and it's more externally facing. And we're actually shifting both of our communities over to the cloud later this year. So we're in big upgrade mode at the moment. So in total, we cover about 42,000 users. And our internal community, NEO, has about 70 to 75% of our employees log in on a daily basis. So it's super busy. There's lots and lots of activity. And we cover 70 plus countries. So it's, you know, truly global, and it's really where a lot of people are getting a lot of their work done at Pearson.
That's really, really interesting. And I mean, Pearson is, it's a huge global company. And so having these 36,000 employees on NEO specifically, I could imagine is a very big win for you. How long have the communities been around? Has it been a few years?
Yeah, so we launched a soft launch in December 2010.
Okay.
And the approach that we took was to basically load everybody into our community. We didn't have anything in the community. And we built a group of evangelists. So there's about 500 evangelists. They were built up from kind of HR, marketing, communications folk. Mm-hmm. And we told them how to log in, which was with single sign-on, so everybody was able to log in with their username and password for their computers. And we said, come in, take a look around, get familiar, and then tell your friends. And so by the time we did our kind of hard launch with our CEO in February 2011, mm-hmm. we already had 10,000 users mm-hmm. in the community starting to think about how they could use it within their own teams. And then kind of alongside that, we had our intranet migration project happening. So Pearson, a global company built up by acquisition, had accumulated a number of intranets. Mm-hmm. And so I think at the last count, it was about 136 that we actually closed down and migrated across to NEO. So now we only have one intranet across Pearson.
Oh my gosh.
Then multiple intranets.
That sounds like so much work to consolidate that many down into one space.
But it was.
Well, good for you. Congratulations. Well, thank you so much for giving us that insight. And I love that you started with sort of a soft launch and that by the time you actually did your more official launch a few months later, you had, you know, plenty of employees in the community. You already had people using it. You already had people finding the use case. And so when you had people with really high visibility, like your CEO that you wanted to impress, they were able to see the community in a state where it was already starting to gel and come together and work. And I think that's a really great strategy. I don't know that there's many community builders out there that take that approach. So thank you so much for sharing that piece. But your topic at Sprint really centered around the idea of building a highly engaged community. And a key component, as I was looking through your slides, of this engagement really seemed to be centered around the notion of advocates or champions or super users. So I'd love to talk a little bit more about that aspect of it. What foundations or what building blocks did you have that help you put together the Strong Advocate program?
So when we first launched Neo, we sort of had kind of two programs running side by side, really. So we had the evangelist program, and so that built from, you know, the original 500. But we actually, you know, as we sort of started to grow the community, evangelists kind of spring out from, you know, highly unlikely places, and people would suddenly really get why Neo was important for their business and jump on board. And so we would add them to the evangelist program. And so a large part of what we did with those people was really help them with promotional materials, training materials. We gave them, you know, train the trainer presentations, encouraged them to have lunch and learns within their own business locations, because there was only me as a community manager at that time. And, you know, we have offices across the globe, across, you know, 38,000 employees. So I just couldn't be everywhere all of the time. So it was really critical that we had some super engaged evangelists to help us grow our community. And then alongside that, we had what we call a sort of group and space administrators. So anybody in Neo can have a group. So anybody can create their own kind of mini community. But our spaces are managed more from a kind of corporate communication, strategic business point of view. And so that group of people have a very different kind of need in terms of the training and the support and the information that we need to give them. So we do very specific space and group owner training. We provide them with templates and information about how to be a good community manager. And really they build up the big communities that kind of map our organization. So it was really a case of kind of bottom up and then kind of top down approach. That really, I think, built, you know, a successful community in the first instance. And then what kind of happened is some of the evangelists leave the company, some of the evangelists change jobs, some of the evangelists, you know, have less of an interest in kind of evangelizing, you know, for a number of different reasons. And actually what we realized is the community didn't need sort of rah-rah cheerleaders, because Neo was starting to really bed into the organization. And it also didn't feel like we wanted to do that anymore. We didn't want people to be championing and sort of having, you know, quizzes about Neo and come and have a look in Neo, because it was really a core tool for Pearson. So we actually evolved our evangelist program into a more champion program, and we actually borrowed that kind of template from the Jive community itself. I'm a Jive champion, and we wanted to make it more of a kind of exclusive community. So people who had really demonstrated criteria that we felt was really useful within the community. So they'd built really strong communities locally or for a particular strategic activity in the community, or they had demonstrated, you know, really strong leadership skills around helping the community be a better place. So we did a kind of selection process, and we really wanted to look after our champions. So we invited them to an exclusive group. They got lots of exclusive swag. It was recognized with their managers and also their SVP that they've been selected to be part of the champion program. And we started to really cultivate that community by giving them more exclusive access to new features. They got a sneak peek of upgrades that were happening and new sort of applications and add-ons that we were adding to the community. And we felt that, you know, that's really seen us through for the last couple of years. But now as we, you know, come into our sort of fourth and fifth year, we're reevaluating that again. And I think that's one of the key things. Whatever your advocate or champion program is, it can't stay the same. It has to evolve with your community, because the needs of the community change. And I think, you know, Pearson has a more mature community than some organizations. And so we've had to adapt that. And then our sort of latest iteration is the idea of kind of superheroes. And we've started to identify them as people who are, we've kind of gone back to self-selection, And we're using those people to really help us with some of the sort of cheerleading again, because we're trying to revisit best practice, simplification, getting people to attend training because we're going through an upgrade. So actually we do need to be, you know, sort of more of the cheerleader versus the champion. And I'm sure that in a couple of years' time, we'll probably revert back to the champion program or, you know, something similar. But, you know, rest assured, we'll constantly be evolving our advocate program based on the needs of NEO at the time.
That's interesting. It's almost cyclical in a way that the community sort of evolves. It goes from more of like an infancy stage to be more established, to be more mature. And then as you're undertaking this huge technological enhancement, so to speak, that now it's almost placing you back in sort of the infancy stage where you're having to reteach and retrain. And, you know, you probably have a lot of new employees that you're wanting to onboard and bring on to NEO as well. And so that's a really interesting way to look at it. And I don't know of many advocate and champion programs out there that are in a constant state of evolution. I think that some community managers may, you know, they may add new things to the program or they may come up with new ideas later, but this more very strategic idea of knowing that your advocate program is going to need to be, it's going to need to shift and it's going to need to evolve to be able to support the community is a much bigger principle, I think, that people could keep in mind.
Yep.
Interesting. And is that something that you just found out by, you know, just by seeing the way the community took shape, or was that more of a best practice that you had already known to evolve your advocate program?
No, I mean, I think really it's just because we've been responding to the needs of the community. You know, we checked in with the evangelists and sort of said, you know, it's an opt out, opt in, you know, if you want to continue on the program. And you know, a lot of people actually from the Evangelist program did become champions. I mean, there was very clear champions. But then, you know, with the champion program where it is at the minute, what we've realized is that, you know, with the upgrade, the people who have been some of our best champions at, you know, leading business change aren't necessarily the type of people who are going to get people excited about the upgrade and jump on board with running training and putting posters up in the office. So I think it's just listening to the community. And, you know, if I've learned anything in the last sort of 4 years of doing community management, it's that you have to listen to your community and really, you know, make decisions about your community based on what the community needs.
That's actually a very perfect segue into my next question here. And that was that in your slides, I noticed that you had like listen to your community as a very big principle. But then the next principle you had listed was also trust your community and the idea of just trusting them. And I'm curious to know a little bit more about what does that look like when you trust your community? What actions do you take? I think some people or some community managers will say, well, yeah, sure, I trust the community. But I guess I would challenge them to think, but do you really? And so I'm curious to know what did trust look like for you? How did your actions sort of convey that trust?
So I think the first thing to kind of be upfront about is that, you know, Pearson isn't in a regulatory bank. It's not, you know, it doesn't face some of the same challenges that, you know, some of my other sort of peers in other communities probably face. So, you know, putting that up front, that makes life a little bit easier within Pearson. And so the kind of leadership that I work with are very, you know, technology focused. You know, we're a changing, evolving technology company. And we also have a really great CEO who had great vision, and she was superseded by another CEO who also, you know, really gets this stuff. So that is the kind of upfront piece that I will say. So, you know, I am able to trust my community in a big way because I have that backing from our leadership. But really, I think the trust comes in a couple of different sort of forms. First of all, when we first launched NEO, yes, we were migrating 136 intranets, but at the same time, there wasn't other content. You know, communities hadn't sort of sprung up. It was a brand new blank canvas. And so in the very beginning, a lot of the communities that sprung up were very social. So, you know, the food lovers all over the world community, the movie madness, the music group, the runners group, etc. And so a lot of kind of middle managers and some senior leaders felt very uncomfortable with where NEO was headed in terms of social. And if you looked at the kind of activity stream on the homepage, you know, every sort of second post or every third post may have been something social in those very early days. And I kept sort of saying, you know, trust the community, because for every person who jumps into the runners group or the food group and makes a post, they then get comfortable with the community, they get comfortable with how it works, and then they feel braver and ready to then, you know, spring into their team group or, you know, one of the sort of subject matter expert groups that they're perhaps being encouraged to get involved in. And so what we found was a lot of our community really did need to take that step that didn't feel that scary in front of their peers, in order to make the kind of leap into, you know, the business element and the kind of more value adding elements of the Pearson community. So that was the kind of first thing. The second thing, which some of my community manager counterparts will say is absolute madness, is that we didn't set any limitations on groups. So we have 18,000 groups within NEO, and I'm really, really comfortable with the amount of groups that we have, which is about 40% in the secret sort of section. So
we're like private?
Yes. Well, okay. So we have open groups, members only groups, private and secret. So private are discoverable and you can request to join. Secret are non-discoverable and you have to have an invitation to join. Mm. And the reason I'm super comfortable with that is because when people are going to create a community that is going to be open and, you know, encouraged for people across Pearson to join, it's really comforting to have a secret kind of sandbox or space where you can test out the overview page, test out how blogs are going to look and how you might want to kind of, you know, mess around with some of this stuff. Because a lot of the community managers within Pearson are assistants who or are administrators. And so they're suddenly, you know, creating a community for senior executives or, you know, very senior people within the organization. They really need to feel comfortable with being able to do that in the kind of open forum. So we really encourage our community to do that kind of thing. And I think, you know, it's really important to allow some of that stuff to happen. So, you know, that's a sort of second way that we're really, you know, trusting our community and allowing them to kind of have secret groups. And what we've really, you know, noticed is that when people have that safety net, you know, then they really flourish when they're creating the groups in the wider space. And then the other thing is just really around the kind of moderation and the conversation. So, you know, a social conversation can very quickly turn into a business conversation because two people make a connection. And, mm-hmm. you know, the best example we had of that was people talking about 80s, their favorite 80s cartoon. And I think there was something ridiculous, like 250 comments. And then, you know, the 252nd comment was, oh my God, I think we work on something really similar. And then they took the conversation to, you know, another part of NEO and started to talk about business and made a connection. And that was a really great use case for us because we were like, there you go. See, you know, people have these wonderful conversations, those water cooler conversations, which are global, not just happening in the water cooler in the office that person belongs in, but eventually it kind of turns back into business and into the workplace. So, you know, those sort of conversations are really uncomfortable for some senior leaders and for some people in the community. But my advice would be trust them. Let those conversations flourish because they are really what help you make an engaged community in the long run.
Yeah, I completely agree with all of that, especially related to the notion of the water cooler and social bonding type discussions that happen. You know, people, I think, have to connect on more of a more personal and a more human level to really be inspired and creative. And it's one thing to come into the office and just, you know, kind of sit down and do your job and that sort of thing. But you'll be much more productive. You'll be much more efficient. You'll be much more effective if you are developing stronger relationships with your peers. And then you'll find, you know, maybe someone has an experience in a past job that you would have never known about that could then, you know, help you do something else. And it's interesting. I think with the social collaboration technologies, you are seeing more of a shift where the senior leadership is concerned about giving up a little bit of that control in a way, where they want to make sure, you know, everyone's productive, everyone's, you know, on task when they come into the office. But it is really beautiful, I think, and I don't know if beautiful is the right word, but it's the word I'm going to use now. to be able to show, like, look, here's this example of this purely social conversation that has then transformed into something that actually affects positive change for our business. So,
yeah, and I think the other thing to point out there as well is that senior leaders forget that they get to network face-to-face with their peers on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. You know, senior executives have, you know, a lot more ability to travel. They have off-site meetings. You know, they're meeting their teams. You know, if you work in, you know, in the accounts team in a small office in the middle of nowhere, your accessibility to network and find your peers and, you know, really feel like you work as part of a global company is quite limited. But these communities offer you that opportunity to, you know, suddenly see the world from outside of that small office that you work in, you know, in the middle of the Midwest in the US. So I think that's another thing that senior leaders kind of need to get their head around is that, you know, they're now offering those networking opportunities, be it online, to a wider population. And I think that has to be a good thing for business and business collaboration.
Absolutely. I don't ever see how that could not be a good thing in one case. And it's a very good point that you bring up that they do get the opportunity to meet in person, whereas a lot of the other employees don't. And so why not just facilitate the experience online? One of the other things that you had mentioned in your conversation related to use cases and examples as a way to drive adoption and engagement. And I can definitely see how they work in an internal use case. I'm curious to know a little bit more how they work with more of like an external use case. But then alongside of that, how do you go about putting them together and how do you communicate? So what does your whole use case process look like?
So it's interesting that you bring up external because I think, you know, when we launched NeoConnect, it was very much a pet project. We'd had quite a few people asking us, oh, you know, it'd be great if we had something like Neo to work with, you know, partners or authors or, you know, various different people that we collaborate with that we wouldn't want to give access to Neo. So we kind of threw it up together as a kind of use case. And actually, it was really important that those people who kind of came to that community in the first place, we really were able to capture what they were doing and then share it within Neo so that other people could learn about, you know, potentially how they might use our external community. And the way that we've done that both on the external side and internal is in a couple of ways. So first off, you know, we monitor the community on a regular basis. So we're in there, we're seeing where the conversations go, where, you know, the masses are accruing. But also it's really difficult to see those little small conversations. Mm-hmm. So what we found was that if we ask people to tell us their use case story, then, you know, normally you'd get absolutely nothing back. You might get the odd story, but you wouldn't really get a huge amount. But if you ask people to tell other people's story, like tell us or nominate somebody who you think's done a really good job, you tend to get a lot more use cases. So
interesting.
So we've had a couple of iterations of kind of Neo Awards where basically we ask the community, nominate your favorite group that you visit, nominate your you know, best value case, nominate the activity on Neo that saved you money, or, you know, somebody has saved money. And actually then we tend to get a lot more people kind of nominating. I don't know whether it's just people don't like nominating themselves or they don't think they have a very interesting story to tell. But when we sort of turned it on its head, that seemed to get a lot more response. And then basically, once you've got those kind of nominations, obviously, you can whittle it down to some really, really great use cases, you know, provide them with an award and tell their story. But you also have lots of other use cases which might not win the big award, but actually you can go and delve a bit deeper. And then we would, you know, we have a template and then we basically write their story and then share it within a group that we call Creating Business Value with Neo. And so this year we've changed it to kind of superheroes. So we've given it a bit of a theme and we've made it a little bit more sort of fun and interesting and creating heroes across our community. And we've had capes and hero badges and points given out, etc. But, you know, at the heart of it, what's the most important piece is just gathering the stories in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when we talk about the value that Neo adds within Pearson, yes, we measure various different metrics and engagement levels. But, you know, the thing that really interests our senior executives more than anything are the stories. You know, so tell me when we've got a product to market quicker because two people had a conversation about code. Tell me the story when, you know, users are coming together to collaborate to make, you know, a better experience for our customers. That's the stuff that they're really interested in. The numbers are great, but the stories are even better. So that's how we've really been gathering up our use cases across our community.
That's a really interesting. I just love how you've turned the notion on its head. Don't nominate yourself, but nominate someone else, because people are much more apt to give other folks praise for whatever the reason. And when you go about collecting these use cases, are you using a Google form that people go in and fill out? Is there a particular feature within Jive that you use?
We use Google. It's a Google form. And actually what we've done this year, just to change it a little bit, is instead of having a window when we ask everyone to gather their stories, is actually as soon as the award process had finished for last year, we created a brand new Google form and we've had it open, you know, for the entire year, because we want to encourage people to nominate a story when it happens. Because that's the other thing. Like, if you run an awards or use case collection process, you know, on an annual basis, you'll get what happened sort of most recently. But people forget, you know, things move on so quickly. Mm-hmm. So making sure that you've got a process to gather those stories all year round
is
also really, really important.
Interesting. Well, that's really a great thing to hear, especially with using the forms and keeping them open the entire time. I love it when people can – I think a big skill that most community managers have is that we're all very, very creative and we're really good at kind of hacking our way around things, and I don't think it's a skill that most people get enough credit for. And so the idea of being able to integrate different technologies into the platform that you're already using to be able to get the most out of it is something that I love to see. I love to hear it. But speaking about technology, so you've mentioned you're doing this really big upgrade right now. And we all know all of the studies that have been done on how poor web experiences can deter users and can deter engagement. But aside from that, how else does the technology that you use really help to drive the engagement? Are there particular tools that have worked for you and tools that just haven't?
So I think, I mean, Pearson's probably like many companies, we've been on quite a big digital transformation. And I think one of the challenges that we really have had around the technology is assumption. So we assume that people, you know how to get the best out of technology. And actually I'd say that, you know, in the majority of cases, that's not true. So, you know, not many people have ever been trained on how to use email. And actually, if you watch a person use email, they're probably only using, you know, a quarter of all of the wonderful tools that are available within email, because, you know, they just literally do the kind of send a message, receive a message, and be in the email tyranny that we all love and hate.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the things that, you know, really drove why we picked Jive was that we felt it was quite intuitive. We felt it was easy to use. We felt that it wouldn't need training, and it wouldn't need lots of support to get it going. And I think that was a really, really false assumption that we made, because, you know, logging in is fairly simple and you can create quite a good user experience in terms of what you decide to have on your homepage. But you know what? A lot of our employees don't use Facebook. A lot of our employees don't do online shopping. And actually what we found when we really dug into, you know, the groups of people who hadn't come to the Neo party was that actually they were incredibly terrified of the technology. And so we really did have to revisit, you know, how we were supporting users and how we were taking them through training. So assuming that, you know, you could create a Neo help area and put lots of documentation about how to, you know, figure yourself around Neo wasn't enough. You know, somebody who is sitting there terrified of this, terrified of posting something that the entire Pearson population could see, really needed was a face-to-face training session and a little bit of hand-holding. So we've been sort of through, you know, with our champions, with our evangelists, a kind of revisiting of supporting people. And so that's really why with the upgrade, we are really making sure that we've got great training, and great support for our users. And then the other thing I think that's really sort of impacting sort of how we use this technology is that, you know, mobile is so important. Our mm-hmm. sales guys are using mobile devices. You know, people are bringing their own devices to work. It's really, really critical that the mobile experience is just as good as the desktop, laptop experience. So one of the things we're excited about with the upgrade is that the mobile experience gets a lot better. So we will be focusing a lot of our support and training material around, you know, doing all the things that you need to do on Neo, but through your mobile. Because that experience gets a lot better. So I think it's a challenge because lots and lots of people just assume, oh, this stuff is super easy. It's super intuitive. It really is for digital natives and our millennials and, you know, the people who don't mind clicking around until they figure this stuff out. But actually, for a lot of our populations, it's really, really hard.
Yep. It's still really hard. And it's very important to keep that in mind, I think. Well, we're getting close to the end of our conversation. And I have one last question that I want to ask you. I like to try and ask this to most of my guests. And that is, what is the one question related to this topic of engagement that I should have asked you about that I didn't? And then what's your answer to it?
So I would probably say the best question that people ask me all the time is, how do you get leadership buy-in? Because I think
that is... we could have had a whole separate podcast on that, but that's a great question.
Because I think, you know, a lot of people who are either quite new to this or, you know, maybe even have a community, but they've got a new CEO, they kind of have to revisit and to re-evaluate. And I think the answer that I would draw on very much connects to the answer that I gave to the last question, which is, you know, don't assume your leaders really understand this technology. So what I found is that those leaders who resist the most, it generally comes down to a complete and utter lack of understanding of what this, you know, software, this technology can do for them. Mm-hmm. And so my advice would be take the software, the system, you know, the vendor, whoever it is that you're using, out of the equation, out of the conversation, and really sit down with your leaders and talk to them about their business challenges, their business problems, the things that are keeping them awake at night, and listen. And that goes back to that thing that's, you know, really critical of being a community manager, is listening. And then what I do is I listen to all the things that they've told me, and then I turn it around and use my use cases to then explore ways that, you know, for us, it's Neo, could actually really help them with some of those challenges. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they're experiencing really big challenges because they've just changed their organization structure and they're globally dispersed and, you know, nobody's really clear about the strategy, okay, let's think about how we can bring all that stuff together within your community, you know, create a blog if that's what needs to happen, where you're regularly communicating. Give the ownership to your entire leadership team. It's not all on your shoulders. You know, demonstrate best practice in working as a global team, et cetera, et cetera. There's all sorts of different things that you can suggest to them. But I think if you take the platform out, you're not then known as the Neo person. Mm-hmm. You're known as the person who can add business value across your community. You know, then you get a seat at that leadership table. Then you get the leadership buy-in.
That's really great advice and really great tips to end on. Thank you so much for bringing that piece up. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I've had a great time learning more about the Neo community and about Kim's work with Pearson. So thank you so much for being our guest on the show today. I really appreciate it. Thanks again to all of our listeners out there. Don't forget to review the show notes for some links. You can review Kim's Sprint presentation. I'll have that published. And also make sure to leave us a review on iTunes or on Stitcher. We're available in both places and would love to hear your thoughts. Additionally, if you've got any questions for me or for Kim or any feedback on the podcast, you're more than welcome to tweet it to us using the hashtag FBPodcast. See you next time.